Happy Sunday. It's
Happy
World Cup
Sunday.
Sunday, guys. World Cup Sunday.
Oh, that is today, isn't it?
Still happening? When is this over, dude?
Today. Today is the final.
Thank God. This, you have made my morning. I'm so I have never been more tired of hearing about a thing. I can't handle it anymore. My friends were playing FIFA at the Christmas party I was at yesterday. I had to leave the room. I'm like triggered, dude.
That's hilarious. I did not know that the World Cup did this to you. I'm sorry.
I mean, it was fine once and twice. Like, it was cute at first when people are like watching stuff during meetings or during class. But at a certain point, it's like, bro, we're professionals. We're degreed professionals. And people are squealing at their bootleg Telemundo streams of a soccer game from two countries that they've never been to and don't really care about. I don't get it.
I only squealed when Mexico won. So okay. I didn't participate in that. But I was happy when some of them would win because then I would get money.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
And I care about Morocco. So I
And not to be like that, but like it was actually really fun to bond with the kids about the World Cup. Like the kids were really into it. Like it was such a, like it felt very bond-like. They were like, oh, like are we gonna like, can we watch the game a little bit? Like, so who do you think is gonna win, Miss H? Like, how's your pool doing? And it was really cute. Like, honestly, I did enjoy just being able to bond with them about it. So I enjoyed that a lot.
Yeah, that's very nice. That is cute and nice.
Us picking away at Eric's negativity about the World Cup slowly.
I'm just saying, dude, so when the next like Godzilla flick comes out, I'm gonna do what you guys do. I'm gonna drop everything. I'm gonna sit there. I'm gonna watch a bootleg stream of Godzilla. First building he smashes, you're gonna hear me at my desk. Yeah! Oh my God! Yeah! All right, and you guys are all gonna have to deal with it.
All right, well, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the latest Teach Forex Network podcast episode. We're closing in on the end of 2022, and we have an exciting podcast for us today. Just a reminder, the Teach Forex Network here is the premier on-demand educator development service focused on four pillars of technology, which are curriculum, technology, community, and leadership. I'm Scott Feiereisen. With us here, as always, is the wonderful and jubilant and exciting Eric Johnson.
I really, that's a great switcheroo, man, because I
was expecting me.
Yeah, I was expecting Jess. And so the opposite, if you're going to describe Jess as you would describe me, is
that was
like
a curveball. I didn't get that far into it. And then our other
sad
host,
sack.
The tech expert.
Paranoid.
Anxious.
Yeah, Jess Warache, how are you doing?
Good, good. How are you guys?
So as we close out the school year, we were reflecting on our job performance, on our job experience, all the things that we've been through. And it's always fun to talk about random past jobs that you had. I know I like to talk about that with the students. I think that that's fun. They get a kick out of the weird jobs I've had in the past. And I know you guys have some great past experiences as well. So today we're going to share how past job experiences have prepared us to teach, have helped us be the teachers that we are. So getting us started, Jessica has something to share with us.
Yeah, dude, I feel like, I didn't have many, like I'm still young, low-key, if you guys hadn't noticed. I don't know if you guys noticed. But I haven't had many jobs before working at the school that we're at and being like a full-time teacher. But I did work at a daycare for 3 years. And I was like a four-year-old teacher, like, right? Like a teacher's aide and stuff like that.
What is the capacity? Just to set the stage, Jess, because I don't have kids. They frighten me. Like, what's a four-year-old up to? Like, what are they about?
They're... I feel like they play together more. So there's a lot of drama with them. Like they're very like, he took my toy, like, or he's not sharing, or he said something mean. So it's very much the stage of like, hey, like I'm trying to like be cool with these people and they're like taking my stuff. Like come
right.
So that would happen a lot. I think that was one of the biggest things in that they were very needy. But I think all kids are very needy. But yeah, it was an experience. I worked there for 3 years. And then I think like one of the most distinct memories that I can remember is we went and took these class of 20 preschoolers, the four-year-olds. So it was me and my other coworker. So it's one teacher to 10 kids. So that might seem like, okay, makes sense, but it was a lot, especially with four-year-olds. And I remember we went to Lincoln Park Zoo, and Lincoln Park Zoo is in the middle of downtown Chicago. It's got like, it's free, so there's no like gated in stuff. So it was very nerve-wracking because I'm like constantly like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. You know, I have like all of my children and none of them have ran away. Well, one of the kids was trying to wander off and I like grabbed her and I was like, hey, can't do that. And in protest, she threw her shoes into one of the enclosures, like her sneakers. So she did not have shoes.
Which enclosure?
I think it was the giraffes. I think that was where we were by, but she threw them. She's like, I don't want to do this. Blah, blah. I'm not walking away. And she threw her shoes into the enclosure. And I was like, ma'am, what did you just do? And so I think that really solidified how much patience you're going to have when you are working in education. So I think like that was like my biggest, like I had to have the most utmost patience and not go off on this 4-year-old, because in her logical brain, in her 4-year-old brain, this all made sense. Of course, I'm going to throw my shoes into the enclosure. But then we came time to realize that we were going to be late for the bus. So here we are running with 20 preschoolers towards the bus at the entrance of the Lincoln Park Zoo. And this little girl doesn't have shoes. So what I do then is I have to like put this little girl on my back and I start and we like are having the kids hold hands, and me and my coworker, she's in the front, I'm in the back, and we're like running with all these kids, and I have this little 4-year-old on my back, and I will never forget her name either. And I just, it was very funny at the end of it, and I admired how much patience I had in that moment. So I think that that's like how it prepared me to be a teacher, because I'm like, well, if I can handle that and I can have the patience to manage all of that, I can manage anything else, right? So I think that that's like how my past job really just kind of set me up for teaching now.
Are there, when you're teaching high school students, do you find you ever say the same things you had to say to preschoolers? Is there any 100%. Crossover? Like what sort of stuff do you feel like you run into where it's like, you realize it's really not that much different?
So it's funny because I literally tell this to my fifth period class because they're my seniors. And I'm like, dude, like, what is going on? You guys are seniors. Why am I talking like I still work at the daycare? Because I think I remember being like, hey, Mario, stop licking his food. Please keep your hands to yourself. Please don't eat stuff off the floor. I don't know. Those are like my top three for that class. And I'm like, dude, you guys are adults in this class right now. Why am I speaking to you like I did at the 4-year-olds?
That's wild. Yeah, I find I got to do a lot of like the stop touching each other. People like to poke each other at their desks, you know, and they're like just poking and prodding and like slightly wrestling. It's like, the hell are you doing? Stop touching each other.
Yeah, like leave each other alone. Like keep hands to ourselves. Let's put our hands in our laps, please.
Yeah, save room for Jesus.
And I feel like I'm back at that daycare all over again.
Wow.
I was a student where I was poking and touching people and touching stuff. And like, yeah, so I understand. I wasn't quite licking people or the floor, but you know, sometimes you get hungry. Sometimes you got to eat what you got to eat around there.
Yeah, I was telling my students, I used to eat paste in kindergarten. Me and this kid, Mark.
You were a paste eater.
I was a paste eater. Yeah, paste. Elmer's was I too. Okay. We dip pretzel sticks in Elmer's, which kind of explains a lot in terms of where I am now. Just the paste, not as good as like just white Elmer's glue. That was not too bad. Interesting, unique. Here's the thing. It's got a unique mouthfeel. I mean, it's glue, right? So there's a challenge associated with eating it. Kind of like when you eat it. I don't know if you guys ever did this in school, talking about dumb kid stuff, like eating a fruit roll up without taking the plastic off. I don't know if that was just a me thing, but some of us I might be revealing too much about my past here, but it wasn't just me. All right. Some of us, there was, I don't know, something going on in my school. And it was like, did you know you don't have to take the plastic off a fruit roll up? And we would eat the fruit roll ups with the plastic on. You know, nowadays we talk, there's always like the NYT articles about like microplastics are in your gut and you're going to get plastic cancer when you're old. Well, nah, we were just eating plastic when I was a kid. So yeah, I don't know what is with kids just like eating. My bird is the same way. It must be some like lower intelligence animal thing. Like, yo, I'm going to just eat stuff to decipher the world.
So do you feel like you would have eaten Tide Pods if there were Tide Pods back then, would you have eaten a Tide Pod?
I don't think so. I mean, come on. Like, that's so disgusting. You got it. I think I always knew. Because here's the thing. Elmer's glue, like, we ate it knowing you weren't supposed to, but it says non-toxic on it, right? So we knew we weren't going to die. Whereas there's nowhere on a case of Tide that says, yo, this is non-toxic. I don't think I would have been that dumb. All right. So, but who knows? You know, only, you know, Tide Pods weren't around when I was a kid. It was just
right. Only like, 5-year-old Eric Johnson knows.
Yeah, exactly.
Four-year-old Eric Johnson in class eating paste. And you're like, Eric, stop eating paste. Stop eating the paste off the floor.
Yeah. I was cute as hell. I was really pudgy. And then my strat was always to finish my work as fast as humanly possible so I could get my free time, which culminated in the worst case scenario in which in my first grade class, I literally didn't do work the entire like semester and I just hid it in my desk and then I went to do free time, which is insane that the teacher didn't notice because I did no work. I would just, she'd give us the piles of work, I'd hide it in my desk and then I'd go play. And when she finally found out, she dumped my entire desk out. My class rival was like, oh, so that's how Eric finished. I feel like I've told this story in the podcast before. It was really traumatic though. And I don't know how the teacher didn't notice.
Your first grade rival?
Yeah, his name was also Eric. His name was also Eric. And I thought tornadoes were cooler and more destructive. And he thought hurricanes were cooler and more destructive. And we were both like this. I mean, immediately following my talk about eating all the paste that I was eating. But we both like were like this. We were like the smart kids. All right. And like all the advanced reading programs and stuff. And we were like volunteer. You know, I was like reading audiobooks. I was doing audiobooks for the visually impaired kids as like a kid. So I'd be like reading Mr. Popper's Penguins at recess. And, you know, he was like volunteering after school. We're like, I don't know, Obama and Romney, you know. Of our first grade paste eating Obama and Romney. And yeah, he watched the teacher dump my desk full of the assignments I didn't do for an entire semester in front of the whole class. And I can still hear his stupid little voice. So that's how Eric always finished his work.
Oh man,
that's hilarious.
Yeah, wow. I think he's like a doctor now. So,
so he lost, so you won. So yeah, definitely beat that. He doesn't have a podcast. He doesn't have a teacher.
He doesn't got a podcast. And you know what? I don't have to worry about malpractice insurance. So
how about that?
Oh my God.
But I want to hear about Fire's job. Before we continue what is maybe becoming just my weekly therapy session, Fire, your job here that you listed, it seems fascinating. I want to hear a lot about this.
Yeah, I've had some fun jobs. This one immediately came to mind, but some other ones that came to mind were working in a movie theater, working at Culver's, the custard stand, that's a good one. And then working as a mosquito management. I would spray for mosquitoes.
Like abatement, right? Is that what they call
it? Yeah, mosquito abatement. Yes. So that was a fun one. I got to drive around in a truck and everything. So that was cool. I
think you're going to mutate from all the pesticide? You got like an extra arm somewhere?
I do. Cool. I only take it out when I teach history. It's my history teaching arm. No, but I think the job that came to mind for me was for two summers, I worked at a major motor speedway for major motorsports events.
This is cool.
Car race and then a big open wheel race. And that would be two or three times a summer. So you would work the whole week and we would do basically like anything that had to be done as far as prepping for the race. So we would bounce from, you know, meeting in a room about, you know, the advertisements that are coming or the sponsors that are coming we got to set up their tents. So then we'd have to go shovel a bunch of mulch and then we'd have to go unload a bunch of product. And then there'd be, you know, 12 different semis moving in and this would all be in one day. And, you know, I'd have my nice little, my dress pants and my polo on and you just have to get into it. You just have to bounce from one thing to another. So I love that job. But I really think about that with teaching is in that it requires you to kind of bounce from one thing to the next and be up for it. So you got to go, okay, you know, we got to go through this reading and the kid raises their hand and like, okay. And you got to get that on a knee, but like, all right, we're doing this. And then, okay, now the bell rings and we got to go, you know, move this shelf or whatever. I got to go move some of this softball equipment. All right, let's move it. And, you know, so just kind of getting your hands involved, getting into it. And I think it's kind of contagious. It like shows other people like, okay, yeah, we're doing this. Let's do this. So I think about that and I enjoy that. It kind of fills my cup. And that's where that came. That was an experience that I really take with me as I teach.
That's huge. And I think that's something that teacher candidates and people that aren't in teaching don't get is like the diversity of stuff we're up to in a day. I think a lot of people just think we materialize in the classroom and teach and then we like deactivate until we teach again. And I don't think non-teachers or people on track to become teachers really realize the breadth of random tasks and random shifts of gears that you're doing throughout the day. And, you know, you are going from consoling a crying kid to being in a work meeting to teaching to maybe literally the teacher equivalent of shoveling mulch, which is like, you know, cleaning somebody's spilled milk off your floor.
Right. Or tardy duty or whatever.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It is wild. So that's actually, I think that's an awesome example, Fire. That's really cool.
That was a great job. I really, I missed that job. That's one where like, boy, If you could trade it, if you can go back and you could just do that forever, wouldn't that be something?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know about 45-year-olds doing that. That probably wouldn't go well. But I did have a golf cart. I had a golf cart and a polo. So, you know, when you're in your early mid-20s and you got a golf cart and a polo and you're getting paid and driving around a racetrack, that was living the dream.
That's great. That's awesome. Mine is very similar, Fire, because I worked in the, not, well, there were no cars or it wasn't as quite intense, but I worked as a building manager at like our university conference center when I was an undergrad. So at our college, we had a lot of like outside conference events that would happen because we had a lot of like space, and it was a similar dynamic working environment where one minute you're setting up a microphone, the next minute you're setting up chairs, then you're dealing with an angry client, then you're like preparing the outdoor area for a picnic or whatever. You're just running around preparing for conference events. And it was a cool job, especially for college students. You could roll out of bed at the start of your shift and you walk 10 feet and you're at work. You grab your radio and you just start doing stuff. But it was interesting in that I eventually got promoted to a building manager. So you were like the guy in charge. You were the guy in charge of what was going on in terms of the conference events. And you were sort of the guy in charge of like the day-to-day flow of like what was happening in the student centers as well. And you were it, right? Your bosses were around, but they didn't live on campus. So if there was some issue, you had to figure it out. So you were in this really dynamic environment. And then as a, you know, 18, 19, 20 year old, it was up to you to solve whatever the problem was, whether like a microphone is busted and there's a ballroom full of 300 pissed off people that want to start their event, or, you know, some nightmare client is coming in and their picnic didn't get ready in time because a night crew didn't set up the stuff outside. There was it really helped me develop like a buck stops here mentality. Like, I don't know. I had never really had a job that required me to take on that responsibility and be like the guy until that moment where, you know, not only are you running around doing this dynamic stuff, but if like something goes wrong or somebody needs help, like it's you. And I've really tried to bring that to education because I've noticed through my time in university, and then I've noticed around me in teaching, I feel like a lot of people don't have a buck stops here mentality. A lot of people have a, I'm gonna let the buck bounce off me mentality. And that affects students, it affects the school, it affects staff. And, you know, I asked my dad once for Christmas, he like engraved, I got a buck stops here plaque on my desk just to remind me, like, you know, if we aren't the ones that handle it, who will? And so whenever I see like a kid crying or having a tough time or like something goofy is going on, like, it's like, okay, it's like me or maybe nobody else. Of course, you guys too. I mean, I know, but there are certainly a lot of teachers out there that they let the buck go right past them.
Absolutely. That's wow. I didn't realize that's the story behind your buck stops here plaque. The buck stops here mentality is tough for some to take on, or easy for people to have their guard up, like you
yes.
said.
Yes. It is tough. Bureaucracy gets in the way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So do you still do that? But, you know, you still have to account for the things that, you know, the interventions that you're providing.
Yeah. I mean, I think about this most in terms of students and student needs, right? If a kid, I think of it a lot in terms of SEL. If a kid is not looking right or not acting right, or there's a change in demeanor, I never let that pass. I will always check in with a kid. I will always, you know, if things are looking really bad, I'll speak to the kid one-on-one and be like, hey, I'm concerned about you. Do you need support? Can I get you support? Or if it's really looking really grim, I am going to get you support. Be ready for a counselor to find you. And because I think a lot of teachers don't want to deal with that, or they don't want to open that can of worms. And it certainly ain't easy when you do, say, an SEL assignment and a kid bears their soul and you're like, oh, we got to really do something about this. And it can be scary. And I think it can cause compassion fatigue, like we've talked about in previous episodes. But just knowing that, you know, okay, I have this kid fourth period. Is their fifth period teacher going to do something, or their sixth period or eighth period or ninth? I mean, hopefully, but if not, I got to be the guy that does it. And then if a kid's coming to the office for help on something or whatever, or a poor substitute is sort of wandering around looking for somebody's desk. I don't know. I just like, there's so much stuff that many people unfortunately just let wander past. But that bureaucracy stuff definitely is a problem. That's where I document, right? I just document everything. I'll do what I can. I'll document it. If I, right. you know, help out a kid in a certain way, I make sure that gets logged.
Yeah. And documenting it just helps bring the other resources in so that you don't have to be the only person taking it on, or you don't have to be the only person addressing it.
Well, that's really important. And you have to be able to delegate it, right? I think there's a difference between letting the buck quote unquote pass you and also knowing how and when to appropriately delegate it, right? Certainly, right. Especially again with like SEL needs for students, there's a lot of stuff that's out of my league, right? I'm not a counselor, okay? And I'm also, you know, if a kid is saying some stuff that's really dark, you know, I'm just not, literally based on the policies of our district, like I'm not supposed to be the last guy that hears that, right? So understanding when and how to delegate and who to delegate to is really, really important. And then to follow up, I guess, Fire, you know, you talk about the bureaucracy part. I think the follow-up is the most important part. Say you report a kid because I got something going on, or you are trying to address some other situation, is not just like letting it slide, saying, okay, hey, I emailed a counselor about this kid later, but actually making sure that like somebody goes and talks to that kid. Because, you know, at our school, we got a gazillion students and the system is overburdened. And so making sure that, that there is that follow-up, sometimes you got to shake the tree a little bit to make sure what needs to happen happens.
Yeah, absolutely. The system, boy, systems, building systems and making sure that they're running the way that they should be, right? Leaders are leaders of systems. So, well, yeah, that's all the stuff that we didn't really think about in teacher university, as you would say. I think.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as we're sort of wrapping up for the day, I think that's something to really think about is certainly many people are going to go straight into teaching from undergrad. But I think for folks that have been career changers or have had an extensive resume before teaching, I think all those experiences can really give you a lot. And I guess if maybe people are listening that are curious about becoming teachers, I think the more you've experienced in life, the more jobs you've had, the more, you know, ways you've gotten your hands dirty in the great existence here on Spaceship Earth, I think the more better set you'll be to be a teacher, right? I think all of these things shape us and give us a unique frame of mind and unique perspectives on education that you can bring and really make a big difference. Sorry, Jess, are we boring you?
No, it's okay. I just had that yawn and I was hoping none of you noticed. And I was like, I should have turned away.
Has anybody got any holiday prep? Anybody have any hosting, any holiday hosting that they have to prepare for this week?
I leave for Mexico Friday. And I still don't have a passport.
Oh, boy.
Oh, you got to get one, dude.
No, yeah. I sent mine to get renewed. And they lost
it. Oh, it was held up from that indictment. Is that what it was?
I sent it to get renewed. It got delayed by a lot. And then I've been calling every day and being like, hey, I need this passport. And they're like, well, we have no appointment, so good luck. And I'm like, okay.
Oh boy.
I guess we'll see.
Good Lord.
Oh boy.
I have one more Christmas present to buy.
Okay.
Ooh, nice. I have not bought any.
You gotta get going, dude.
I'll be in Mexico though, so it's okay. It'll give me a chance to bring back some stuff from the motherland as Christmas gifts.
Nice.
Nice. I'm hosting Christmas Eve. So we are prepping.
That's a big deal.
For that's a big deal. And, you know, as you know, we are expecting our first child in January, the fourth edition of Teach4X. That's the four. So, no, we're hosting Christmas Eve. So just preparing for that. And, you know, working in a school, it's always weird because either you have the full week off or it seems to be like right up to Christmas Eve. So
yeah,
got to get a lot of that stuff done today. And then, yeah, that's about it.
Godspeed.
Take it away, Wanache.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Once again, thank you for tuning in. Please rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you would like to get in touch or ask us a question, you can do so via Spotify or shoot us an email at teach4xcontact@gmail.com.
All right, everybody. You have a great holiday. Enjoy your new year, and we'll see you later.